The psalm and the gospel today talk about the importance of keeping oneself undefiled and free from sin in this world. And as Christ said, there'll always be offences and sins, but it's pretty scary if we're a part of those offences or if we're a part of those sins or we're a part of bringing those sins into the world. But what I want to talk about today is the commandment of God in the gospel. Jesus said, if your hand or foot causes you to sin, cut it off and cast it from you. It is better for you to enter into life lame or maimed rather than having two hands or two feet to be cast into the everlasting fire. And if your eye causes you to sin, pluck it out and cast it from you. It is better for you to enter into life with one eye rather than having two eyes to be cast into hellfire. And before I get into discussing, you know, the radical nature of what Christ is actually asking us, I want to discuss firstly the nature of the body and what and the context in which Christ is telling us to do these things. Because from what it seems in the gospel, in what Christ says, the body is something that is really bad that must be overcome. And so the question is whether this body is something bad or whether it's something good, whether it's something we can use or whether it's something that must be overcome. And in our pre-servants class, we're studying the book of Romans now. And if you read the book of Romans, you are liable to get quite depressed because St. Paul is quite severe with human nature and human flesh. And St. Paul says, he goes on an extended exposition of the nature of the flesh, and he says, for I know that nothing good dwells within me, that is, in my flesh. I can will what is right, but I cannot do it. For the good I want, I do not do, but the evil I do not want, that I do. O wretched man that I am, who will deliver me from this body of death? And in Genesis, Moses, or the writer, states, the Lord saw how great the wickedness of the human race had become on the earth, and that every inclination of the thoughts of the human heart was only evil all the time. So it appears that from these verses that human nature or our body is inherently evil, inherently sinful. But in Orthodoxy, we place a great emphasis on the account in Genesis, when God creates the heaven and the earth, and after each day of creation, he creates something and he says, this is good. And then on the sixth day he created man, and he saw everything that he had made, and he said, and indeed it is very good. So he created man, and not only were we good, but we were very good. And so all of creation is good, and humans are the crown and jewel of that creation. And so after the fall of man, we've inherited the sin of Aaron, not the sin in terms of the consequences, but we inherited the fallen world that we live in now. And in this context, it is in the context of the fallen world that all of these verses that I mentioned talk about human corruption. And so, as a result of this, all of man's inclination is to sin and evil, and the whole world is fallen. But that does not mean that what God has created, good, has become evil. But rather, we have taken what was good and legitimate in creation, and we've corrupted it with the imagination of our own heart. And so, if we think about it, there's nothing in this world that is inherently evil in and of itself. Let's take an obvious example. If we look at something like fornication and adultery and all kinds of sexual immorality that are in the world, they're not. What they are is a corruption of something beautiful that God gave us from the beginning, which was the sexual union between a man and his woman in marriage. And so, sexuality has a purpose and an honored place in Christianity, but the problem comes when we corrupt it with the imaginations of our own heart. Another example is food and alcohol. For example, in Psalm 104, it says, he causes the grass to grow for the cattle and vegetation for the service of man, that he may bring forth food from the earth and wine to make glad the heart of man, oil to make his face shine, and bread which strengthens a man's heart. So here he's saying even wine is good. Wine is there to make glad the heart of man. But the problem comes when we take these gifts from God and we corrupt it. In one case, gluttony, and in another case, drunkenness that has plagued us since the time of Noah. And so the point that I want to make is that everything around you is beautiful and perfect when put in the sphere of God. And in Psalm 19, David says, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the sky above proclaims his handiwork. And in Romans, again, Paul says, for his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world in the things that have been made. So in our bodies, in the world, all of this is a witness to the glory of God. And so the body that we've been given is a perfect gift from God. It's perfect, but the problem comes when we use this body that we've been given and we corrupt it with the imagination of our hearts and minds. And in 1 Corinthians, St. Paul says, do you not know that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit within you? Your body. He didn't say your soul. He said your body. And so man is a complete unity. He's body and soul. And when we die, it's not as if our soul spring from our body, liberated finally. In the final resurrections, our bodies will be raised up with our soul, and they will be recognizable. And this is what St. Paul says in 1 Corinthians. And it is for this reason that we do not generally approve, the Orthodox Church doesn't generally approve of cremation, and this is why they tell you generally not to get tattoos and to keep yourself pure from sexual immorality, because the body is important. And if we look at it in the context of the Church, think about, and this is the beauty of Orthodoxy, every aspect of worship in the Orthodox Church involves your whole body. So when you come into the Church, the first thing you see with your eyes is you look up at the iconostasis, and then when you walk in, if it's a Mass or Vespers, you'll smell the sweet incense and you'll hear the beautiful chants that are going on, and we embrace each other physically in a kiss, and we prostrate ourselves to the ground in worship. All of these things use our bodies for the worship of God. So our body is a perfect thing that we can use for the Church and use for the worship of God. And the problem is that this is a concept that has been lost in much of Western Christianity. So in that context, I want to discuss quickly Christ's word in the Gospel and how to apply it. And I think that the purpose of what Christ is saying, it's something drastic. He's saying, if there's something that causes you to sin, cut it off immediately. Now, is this something that should be taken literally or metaphorically? Should we literally pluck out our eyes and, you know, cut off our arms or whatever it is? And there are people in the Church who have done it before. We know that Origen, who was a famous Church father, apparently castrated himself. And we know of another one, Simon the Tanner, who plucked out his eye because it was causing him to sin. But this is not something that has ever been normative. This is not something that's ever been told to us by the Church that we should do. And so how should we take it? And I think that Christ is telling us that every now and again in our lives we need to look at what we are doing, and we need to get drastic with sin or with our way of life and our spiritual life. And the directive is not to cut off things, but the directive is not to muck around with sin, not to waste our time with things that separate us from God. And a lot of the times we take moderate approaches to sin. So we'll sin, so we'll try, you know, we'll try and do this and try and stop the sin in moderate ways. But what Christ is saying is, it is very important for us to get drastic, to get very serious with sin. And the problem with this moderate lifestyle, or the moderate means of trying to stop sin, is that it doesn't work. So for example, if we're trying to defeat the sin of drunkenness or lust, does it make sense that we go to a club every weekend and say, I'm not going to get drunk, or I'm not going to fall into lust? Or if we are falling into the sins of gossip, why do we hang out with the same friends that always cause us to gossip? And so we make excuses for sins, and we just say, oh, I'm just going to stop it, but without getting drastic with the actual sin. Another example is, do we become hopelessly self-involved and egotistical whenever we jump on Facebook, but still keep Facebook because we need to keep in touch with our friends? Or whenever we use the computer at a certain time, do we end up looking at bad things and refuse to stop going on the computer or putting ourselves in that situation? So what Christ is saying is, whatever you think you stand to lose by cutting off sin, you stand to lose much more by keeping it there. He's saying it's better to burn your computer and enter into heaven with your eyes pure than go to hell with your computer. Or better to enter into heaven with no friends than go to hell with your friends still gossiping away. And it's better for you to go to heaven as a pauper rather than a rich, successful businessman who always put his career before God. Now, all of these are examples, and a lot of times it's not possible to do these things. But what Christ is just trying to tell us is that we need to cut away everything that separates us from him. He's trying to put everything in perspective for us. So what are all of these sins? What is your eye, your hand, all of these things compared to eternity with God? And so what he is saying is that everything we are clinging to, every sin we think makes us happy, is ultimately futile. And every time we succumb to the sweetness of sin, ultimately we'll discover how bitter and miserable it is. And I think it was C.S. Lewis who said that in every human heart there is a hole that only God can fill. And Christ is telling us to cut away everything that we're trying to fit in that hole that only Christ can fill. everything else that we believe will give us joy and happiness and peace, it doesn't work out that way. The only happiness and peace comes from Christ. He says, "My peace I give to you, not as the world gives do I give to you." So what I encourage is that we all discover what it is that's keeping us from God. What are we trying to put in that hole that is designed specifically for God? What is the sin that we keep committing over and over again and refuse to be able to beat it? And whatever it is, we need to make the decision right now to cut it off and commit to never commit that sin again. There should be no compromise, no hesitation, no regret. The sin needs to be cut off immediately, and that's what Christ is telling us. So then the point is, then just to move on, the next point is, what do we do once we have cut off the sin? So let's say we listen to music that is inappropriate, and we say, no more music. What then? Well, if it stops there and that's as far as it goes, then I'm afraid we may be in some serious trouble, because there's a parable that Christ says in the Gospel. It says there was a person who had a demon, and then the demon was expelled out of the person, and then that demon went into the wilderness and he found seven of his mates, stronger demons than himself, and he came back to that person and he looked in the heart of that person, and what did he find? He found that it was swept clean and put in order. And so those seven or eight demons, however many were, overtook that man, and it says the last state of that man was worse than the first. So what Christ is telling us is, you cannot simply cut off the things that are separating yourself from God and then go on about your life as if it's just normal. He's saying you have to replace whatever it is you're cutting off with Christ. If you simply cut it off and do nothing else, then the sin will come back worse, or another sin will just replace it. So the point that Christ is setting us is, you have to fill your heart with something. Your heart cannot be empty. It has to be filled with something. Either it's Christ or the world. So cutting off the sins in your life is not the end game. It is just phase one. And once you have cut off the sins in your life, you have to throw yourself at Christ's feet. That way, when the devils come back to your soul to discover what they can tempt you with, or whether they can overcome your heart again, they're going to find it inhabited by Christ, and they're not going to be able to conquer you. And so this is the whole point of the introduction about the nature of the body. Everything that we have, our arms, our hands, our body and our feet, they're good things. The problem comes that when we take this creation and put it outside of God's sphere, we start using them for evil rather than for good. So once we have decided to stop corrupting our minds with watching bad things, for example, we cannot simply leave it there. We have to offer our eyes and our minds to God. We have to replace the sin with Christ. And so instead of watching certain things at night or whatever, instead we read the Bible, or we fix our minds on the cross, and we get a taste of the beauty of the Lord. Because once we've used our eyes to see the beauty of the Lord, the beauty of the world will become completely hideous and we won't want anything to do with it. Another example is, if we go to clubs every Saturday night and we decide that we're going to stop going to clubs on Saturday night, do we just sit at home and twiddle our thumbs? That's actually very dangerous, because you might find that you'll fall into another sin, or you'll go back to the same sin. But what we have to do is replace it with Christ. So we go to pray the Tesbeha, for example, and we fill your head with the beauty and the praise and the music of the Lord, so that the music of the world doesn't seem as appealing anymore. And another example is, if we struggle with swearing all the time and we can't stop swearing, if we decide to just stop swearing, you're going to find that it is likely impossible to stop. But instead, you have to replace the swearing with something. So use your tongue to recite the Psalms. Learn the Psalms and recite them day in and day out throughout your mind. And once you're reciting the Psalms, once all of that is going on through your head, you will not be able to corrupt your mind or your tongue with foul language. So the point of all of this is that we are good, we are perfect, and we are created perfect. And God created us, and he said, we are very good. The problem comes that when we take this goodness and we corrupt it with our own minds. Again, in St. Paul's epistles to the Romans, he says, "I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service." So if our bodies were evil, St. Paul would not be asking us to offer them to God. But what we need to do is, we need to offer the whole of ourselves to God. What Christ is telling us in the Gospel is that if there is any member of our bodies causing us to sin, cut it off immediately. And don't just leave it there. Cut it off immediately and present it at Christ's feet. So if your eye causes you to sin, cut it out and give it to Christ. for him to use as it should have been used from the beginning. So just in summary, I think the main thing to take away is that it is time to get drastic with sin and with our lives. Let's not be careless about the things that separate us from God, and let's stop making excuses about why we're committing sins or minimalizing sins and justifying them. Everything that stands between you and Christ needs to be cut off immediately, because what you stand to lose eternally is much more severe. And once that is done, the only way to make sure that the sin stays away or is not simply replaced by another sin is to replace it all with Christ. Whatever you are offering to Satan or to sin in our bodies, offer it to God and see how much better it is in his hands. And glory be to God forever. Amen.